Welcome to the Collecting Wisdom podcast. Collecting Wisdom is a space where you'll find intimate conversations on life, yoga, philosophy, and what it's like to live on purpose from those that I've personally met and have collected wisdom from on my own path. I'm Marissa Rose, founder of The Well Studio, yoga teacher and teacher trainer, and I will be your host on the Collecting Wisdom podcast. I hope that as you listen to these words and soak up the wisdom in these conversations, that they inspire you towards change and encourage and empower you in your own path, in your own self-knowing, and in your own self-evolution. Welcome back to the Collecting Wisdom podcast. It's an honor to be sitting here in conversation with Kia Miller today, and I'm so excited to bring this conversation to you all in our community as listeners. Kia is a yoga teacher. She is the founder of Radiant Body Yoga. She leads yoga teacher trainings and retreats globally. And I've had the opportunity to take many of her classes on GLOW and also participate in two of her trainings in Kundalini Kriya meditation. So Kia, it is such an honor to have you. I'm really looking forward to seeing where our conversation goes, and thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's truly my honor. And I'm excited to see where we go.
Me too. So I'd love for you to take us back to when you started yoga. What did that look like? How did yoga find you? And if you can just take us on a little journey to how you got to where you are today.
I have to laugh whenever anybody asks me, how did I find yoga? Because yoga definitely found me in I guess the only way perhaps it could find me in the moment it found me. And I think that's probably relevant for all of us. You know, the universe speaks to us in a language that we can relate to. So for me, the language was one of beauty. And so when I was 15, I was obsessed with Raquel Welch. I think it was when I was 15, it was Raquel Welch and Jane Fonda. They were like the babes, and you wanted to be like them. And she had this book out on beauty, and I'd already started to do a little modeling. And so I was sort of in that realm. And there was a yoga sequence in there. It happened to be the Bikram sequence. I didn't know that until actually decades later. But I just remember thinking, oh, if it's good enough for Raquel, it's good enough for me. And so I started doing what she suggested, which was to do the poses every day. And I had this very strange kind of oval long mirror with bamboo around it. And I would be there doing all of my, you know, eagle poses and things that are in that sequence. And it stuck with me. So that was the very beginning. And then just a few years later, when I was 18, I moved to London and I came across this wonderful yoga studio, on Edge Street in Kingston, I think. South Kensington. Sorry, it took me a moment to pull that one up from the memory banks. Anyway, I just started practicing there. The teacher was Godfrey Defroe. He had a base in Ashtanga, although he was teaching his own method. And then I met this incredible woman, Katya, and she became my teacher. And I just dived in. I dived in and I never looked back from that moment. And it's been a long journey since then, but I never looked back. It became the thing that was the place where I met myself. And I was so clear very early on that that's what was happening. I was meeting myself, and I came from a dissociative way of being, people judging me from the outside, and I didn't even know the inside. I didn't know who I was, and felt like I was rarely in here. I was outside of myself. So the yoga practice really taught me how to get into my body. And gosh, what a healing thing. What a healing beginning. Yeah.
I can so relate to that. The practice of yoga is definitely what keeps me in my body when I have tendencies to jump out of my own skin. And it's funny that you shared the Bikram sequence. I also, my very first yoga class blew my mind. It was a 90-minute Bikram class, but he wasn't calling it that. He was calling it Hatha yoga. And afterwards he would add a 20 to 30 minute yoga nidra. So I was in the yoga room for almost 2 hours and right away signed up for teacher training, did the whole teacher training. And then several years later realized that it was the Bikram sequence. He never said it. He just said it was Hatha, which is fair, I guess. But yes, yeah, similar to you. And I think that practice, the static holds were so good for me at that time, just being somebody that naturally has a lot of energy and is very extroverted. It was so sweet to just be forced really to spend time with myself, to just slow down and to hold and to be in my body. It's transformational. How did you find Kundalini yoga? Because, you know, that's mostly how I've practiced with you. I absolutely, if you're listening, you have not taken a Kundalini class with Kia Miller, even if you've never tried Kundalini, she is absolutely incredible. And I highly recommend her classes. And I'm a regular practitioner with you now. And I'm curious how you found Kundalini, when and where, and what were those beginning classes like for you?
I was living in Los Angeles. I was already practicing Vinyasa at Yoga Works down in Santa Monica and Venice, where I was living. And I was still modeling at that time. And there was this woman, two women actually, who were so utterly radiant. And I just remember thinking to myself, whatever they're doing, I want to do that. And so one of them, Sophia, beautiful Swedish woman, took me to Guru Singh's class in Los Angeles. And I sat in front of Guru Singh and it blew my mind. He blew my mind. I'd never been in front of somebody who was as he was. He was speaking deep yogic philosophy, of course, much of which just went over my head at the time. But there was a presence about him that was so attractive to me. And so I kept going, even though to begin with, it was a very strange practice. I was used to Ashtanga. I was used to really moving. I was used to getting a workout. And here I was going to this class, especially Guru Singh's classes, which were a lot of chanting, some simple movements. And, you know, I'd leave and I'd think to myself, well, that was great, but now I have to go do a workout, you know? And so it took a while for me to get it. And I realize in retrospect, what was happening was that I didn't yet have the sensitivity to energy. And Kundalini-based practices are primarily about energy. They're about using the physical postures to stimulate the nervous system, the glandular system, and to stimulate your energy. So that when your energy moves, you can begin to dissolve old emotional patterns. You can literally get the issues out of your tissues. And it's quite a quick process of transformation in that way. And then when your energy gets activated and elevated, it becomes so much more spacious. Your awareness opens, your perception of self expands. And at the beginning, I didn't know enough. I didn't know how to tune into that until I did a strong navel kriya. And in one of the pauses between the exercises, everything went quiet. It was probably only quiet for a matter of seconds, but it felt like a long time to me. And I remember lying there and feeling like, oh, this is who I am. And then in reflection afterwards, realizing, gosh, I'm living my life presenting a dozen different masks to whoever is in front of me, trying to figure out which one they like, who do you want me to be? How can I be so you will love me? And then that recognition of, oh, wait, there's another me in here. And that was the most perhaps profound experience that hooked me. Then I was like, okay, Kundalini yoga, I'm in, and I'm going to go all the way wherever it can take me. I'm going to go. And I remember that commitment. And at first it was only those really powerful practices that worked for me because I needed mm-hmm. something so potent that I could mm-hmm. feel something. And then over time, the subtler practices became interesting to me mm-hmm. As soon as I could feel what they were offering. So yeah. It's an extraordinary journey.
Yes, I so feel that from you, that dedication to your practice and to sharing it as well. Can you, for anyone who's never heard of Kundalini, can you explain where this practice came from? You know, when I practice Kundalini, I experience what you're sharing, and it might take some time, you know, for if you're brand new to it, you might not feel that right away, but it does come and I feel it directly impacts my energy body. And it's completely different than, let's say, you know, my vinyasa practice or my yin practice. I think there's a time and a place for all of them. I'm a lover of all of them, but Kundalini has been so deeply healing and it feels more prescriptive, if I can use that word, where it's directly influencing our system in a certain way. So can you share more about what is happening in these kriyas, where they came from, how it all works a little bit more?
Absolutely. And I just want to reiterate, I also think it's all great. Yin yoga, vinyasa yoga, hatha, mm-hmm. all of it is great. And I think it's good for us to use all of it because mm-hmm. we need different things at different moments in our life. And yes, I agree. Kundalini yoga is very prescriptive mm-hmm. because of how intensely, beautifully intensely it works our energy and moves things through. So mm-hmm. there's kriyas for the kidneys, there's kriyas for the liver, there's kriyas for the whole glandular system, for the nervous system. And ultimately, all these kriyas will balance everything subtly, but they may be more targeted to a specific area so you get a specific result. And at the base of all of these practices is this idea of the cultivation of greater awareness, with this recognition that, you know, within the yoga tradition, we see all beings as being born equal. Nobody's higher, nobody's lower. We all have this inside of ourselves. We all have this pristine consciousness. That consciousness just happens to be veiled by a lot of circumstances in our lives, the hurts, the pains, the unprocessed emotions, the mistaken beliefs, the self-doubt. All of those things create a veiling of our essential self. And so these practices are geared to dissolve what is said in one of the great yogic texts, the Yoga Sutras. It says that the practices are there to dissolve the veils that cover the inner self. Now, all yoga does that, whatever style it is. It just so happens that these Kundalini-based kriyas are very specific and very potent in the use of dynamic exercise, holding breaths, mudras, sound, and moments of relaxation and integration. And the way all of that happens has a very profound effect. I feel like they're utterly necessary in our modern lives because of the amount of information that we're all up against in any given day, because of the demands made on our time and energy in any given day. And because of, you know, the nature of just where we're at in perhaps we could say the collective human unconsciousness, that in order to crack that code, we need to use practices that can meet us where we're at and deliver us to where we need to be in a very short period of time. Mm. So to me, that's what these kriyas do.
Yeah. Yes. The time I think is so fascinating in Kundalini. Can you speak to that? What happens at different points throughout the practice, like 11 minutes, 22 minutes? I know they're sacred numbers and they're making impact in our body, in our nervous system, our brain at certain time periods. And I think that's what's really beautiful about this practice as well, is you can do an 11-minute practice and it can completely shift your state of being. I actually work one-on-one with a Kundalini yoga teacher and yoga therapist as well. And so she'll prescribe specific kriyas with me to do on my own, or we'll do them together. And it's just so incredible how much they can support what you just mentioned, really integration of the self in such a fast paced world when we're taking in so much information from all of our senses all the time. And we're not taught how to just close down and just be with the self. And then the piece of integrating when maybe we're misaligned or we've been thrown out of our natural state. So yeah, I'd love to, if you could share more about the time of Kundalini and what's happening there.
Yeah, well, I'll just preface this by saying that, you know, the modern science, quantum physics, and a lot of studies currently being done specifically out of the University of San Diego are showing the effect of breath work and meditation on all the different systems of the body, and showing, a reflection of how long it takes for certain things to materialize and change. So the yogis definitely understood this thousands of years ago. And what we see is that when we do something, for example, for 3 minutes, there's a lot of kriyas we can do for 3 minutes. I'm thinking of one specifically called Ego Eradicator, where your arms are at 60 degrees and you're pumping your belly with breath of fire. Now, if you do that for 1 minute, it's a challenge. For 2 minutes, it's a bigger challenge. And for 3 minutes, you know, you've really challenged yourself to hold that. And 3 minutes is defined as the period of time that it takes for something to actually impact your body. So you can feel a change, and that change is discernible and a little bit lasting. So, for example, if you're doing a kriya, which is a sequence of exercises, 1 3-minute, and then you rest, integrate, then you do another one, rest, integrate, and another one. So one, the energy is built, then it's, you know, integrated a little, it moves on, and it's built in a slightly different way in the next pose. You integrate it, you do another pose, it's built. So with the shorter timings, particularly when you're in the process of building through a kriya, it's so deeply profound. Having said that, if one is just needing a little reset, you're about to go into a meeting and you don't feel so good about yourself, and you're like, I just got to boost myself because I got to be on, and you do 3 minutes of Ego Eradicator, for example, you go in there and you are on top of your game. You've just cleared the aspect of yourself that is in doubt or whatever you were feeling, insecurity, whatever. And you have changed your state enough that you can access a different space when you go into the meeting. Now, for personal practices, a lot of the meditations and breath work happen for a minimum of 11 minutes. When you tap in for 11 minutes, you're creating a much deeper resonance. And it's said that 11 minutes is when you start to actually access the essential you. You've dissolved enough that you start to tune into your essential you. All of your egoic identities that might try to sort of capture most of your attention in your waking life, those start to fade a little bit to the background, and the essence of you starts to come more online. So then after 11 minutes, you're really able to carry that forward with you for the rest of the day, which is extraordinary. Then we've got 22 minutes. 22 minutes is the time when the three minds, and we're looking at the mind as having these categorizations of negative mind, positive mind, neutral mind. The negative mind is really like the natural instinctual self that is going to look at any given situation and be like, okay, what's the harm, potential harm here? Positive mind is like the risk-taking mind. Okay, you know, it's like, what's the bonus of this moment? What can be done with this moment? And then the neutral mind is like the judge that hears the testimony of the other two and we make a decision. The yogis say that when we're, our mind is operating optimally, in 9 seconds, that whole process happens and there's a clarity. Mm-hmm. When we're busy in our life and, you know, the mind is getting fractured by all of the different things we're focusing on or trying to focus on in one given moment, it's hard to have that level of clarity. So when we do a 22-minute meditation, it really starts to, I could say, heal. It starts to balance. It starts to reconnect the pathways between the parts of the brain that are helping us to have that fluid connection to the neutral mind. And then we get to 31 minutes, which is like a total, like a much deeper level of reset. Blood chemistry shifts start to happen, nervous system, glandular system, all those levels start to happen. So there's a deeper positive enmeshment that's happening between mind, body, energy, spirit. And then there's 62 minutes, which goes deeper still. And then there's 2.5 hours, a 2.5 hour meditation that starts to change the gray matter in the brain. That's the definition given. Although, you know, that takes a little bit of unpacking. And I think, you know, when we start to tune into neuroplasticity and neuroscience, we start to realize, you know, neurons that fire together wire together. So if we're doing something for 2.5 hours, woo, that's a lot of firing together, wiring together. You are creating a massive new productive neural network because of your focus. So that's, so that's a little bit on the timings. Yeah.
Yes, it's fascinating. I know when I first learned this through the teacher that, you know, I've been in one-on-one sessions with, I was like, that makes me want to continue to show up to this practice. Because I think when we hear 11 minutes, we think, oh, easy, simple. But in a Kundalini Kriya, it might not be easy to stay there for 11 minutes with yourself. And it's so worth it. And I think the science behind it and what the yogis taught is just absolutely incredible and so worth the journey and the intentionality that it takes for this practice. So again, yeah, if you're listening and you have not practiced this, try 11 minutes. And I'd love to ask you that next. For somebody who's just beginning a Kundalini practice, what would you suggest for them? Because I feel that the practice can be really diverse. You might not know what you're getting. It's very different than a lot of the mainstream yoga practices, which is something that I love about it. But what would you suggest to somebody who is wanting to try this, but maybe doesn't know where to get started, or even maybe a specific Kriya that you might recommend?
Well, I have a beginner series on GLOW, so one could start there, or you could do any of the practices and just do them at your pace. So what I would say is, especially when it comes to Kundalini yoga, it's weird. I used to call it a lot when I was out traveling on the road, and I'd be in front of new people all the time, and I'd be like, okay, just think of this. Our nickname is Kundalini. Because we do strange things. And I say, expect to do strange things. And your ego is going to want to be like, oh, this is weird. This is stupid. I don't like this. And yet what the neuroscientists are showing us now is that the moment we do something new, a whole different part of the brain is coming online. And we're opening to new possibilities. So yes, whenever we do something new, it's going to prime the brain for new circuitry. So come with an open heart, an open mind, just ready to see what could happen. Oh, I'm just going to show up for this class because, to your point, every single class is different and you don't know what you're going to get, really. So the beauty is to show up knowing you don't know what you're going to get and practicing going along for the ride and just being open. Okay. You know, what what could open for me if I just allow myself to have this experience? Because I just want to preface this also with saying that you're not being invited by any dogma, anything. You're just being invited to use the practice to learn more about yourself. And by that, I mean, you start to learn where your limiting beliefs are, because you start to do something and you're like, maybe a limiting belief comes from your ego. Well, I don't like this. Well, why don't you like this? Oh, because I feel uncomfortable. Okay, well, why do you feel uncomfortable? Oh, because I think that I look weird, or I feel like I'm going to be judged. So, you know, you can start to unpack all these different layers of yourself. And then you can start to see, oh, wait, when I hold my arms up for longer than I want to, a big burst of energy rushes through my body and I feel pretty amazing. And, you know, so there's these little bars that happen where you have an experience and you're like, oh, well, I never would have expected that. And insights come, aha moments. And all because you're opening up this part of the brain that is like the primer for new circuits, because you're having a different experience. So I just say, come with an open heart and mind, and don't think that it'll all be different. It certainly isn't. It's still yoga postures, you know, it's just sequenced differently. And you're being invited into challenging yourself in different ways than you are maybe in a straight up hatha or vinyasa class.
I love that perspective and the intention to just be open and curious. I think that's definitely something that Kundalini yoga has taught me, is it feels very childlike in a way, because you almost have to be playful with yourself. And I know you say that in your classes sometimes, you're like, it's not yoga if you're not having fun. It's like, it's okay to laugh, giggle, jump around. I find it to be very playful and a very joyful experience. There's definitely that tapas, that inner fire, that determination that you need. But I know when, you know, I'm leading trainings and teaching beginners of meditation, I'll share with my journey. I would just open my eyes, you know, I would set a timer for 20 minutes and maybe I check my phone. I'm like, okay, there's 10 minutes left. Like, be in the experience. It's okay to not do it perfectly. That's not the aim at all. And I believe in Kundalini as well. It's also okay if physically, if you can't do something or you're not making it through a specific kriya, you can visualize yourself doing that. Yeah. Is that true?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's really just about, I think, showing up as best as you can, whatever that looks like for you that day. And I really just appreciate your perspective and the way that you teach. And yes, a beginner's series would be really incredible. So take that with Kia if you have not yet on Glow. And Glow is also just an amazing platform with a lot of really incredible teachers. So I just mentioned your style a little bit and what I've experienced, but we have a lot of listeners on the podcast who are newer yoga teachers or may want to become yoga teachers. And I think it's so beautiful that as teachers, we grow and we evolve and we shift along the way. We find new practices and things that inspire us. So I'm just curious right now in your life, what you're inspired by in the yoga practice and how you would describe your current teaching style.
Gosh, that's such a great question. And right now, I think since 2020, since the pandemic happened, I have had the opportunity to do what my soul's been craving for many, many, many years, and that is to double down, triple down, quadruple down on my meditation practice. And so what has been thrilling me is what is unfolding in the unseen world where the eyes are closed, your body is, for all extents and purposes, it's asleep, and you're just hanging out there, you know, within yourself and tuning to all these different aspects of being, including, you know, the different layers of mind that are there in your waking life that you're slowly sifting through, helpful, not helpful, including, you know, the moments where you just cultivate a certain precise concentration and capacity to penetrate into a deeper space. And then the moments where it's almost like you just bump into the mystical and you're like, whoa, okay, something just happened that was not of my doing. So my personal practice, where my passion is the subtle, is the relationship with the one creative consciousness that unites us all, and that access point so that we can become, or I can become, more of that and less of my small personality that is still subject to all the small personality things, you know? And I think that's part of the growth of a yogi is getting to know who we are, how we think, why we think that way, and actually taking the time to question ourselves, well, why do I believe that? And is that something I just swallowed hook, line, and sinker because my parents did, because my culture has, or, and does that feel like truth to me? Because to me, this path of a yogi is a truth seeker's path. That's what we're doing. Yes, we might enter the path because we're trying to get tight abs or, you know, tight glutes and look good in our body. I entered it that way. And because it made me feel better. And that's relevant too. We want to keep our bodies in shape. We want to have that vitality and vibrancy and strength and flexibility and all of that. And I think that if that were all we were to do, we would stagnate and we would miss the bigger picture. So then we want to be in the pranayama and the breath practices that start to open us up into a different force field of energy of self. And then we want to start to engage with the mantra practices, meditation practices that begin to hone and concentrate our mind so that we begin to find mastery and we're not at the mercy of our mind. Because I think the one of the biggest maladies, one of the biggest challenges that I find people are facing now when they go into like emergency mode is that they've lost the capacity to control the way they're thinking. And their thoughts are creating a miserable environment. And so breaking that pattern, there's a great saying in yoga, you know, the mind makes an incredible servant, but a terrible master. When the mind is just seeking to solve the riddle of you or the riddle of your unhappiness or the riddle of your trauma or the riddle of your poverty consciousness or the riddle of self-denial, whatever it is, it gets stuck. It's these neural pathways that you just keep firing, wiring until you're miserable. And you can't unhook from that misery and the body chemistry starts to reflect that misery. This is what I'm seeing playing out in so many people's lives where there's that feeling of like quiet desperation, like, oh, I know I can be happy. I know that I can be creative. I know that I can get out of this unhelpful relationship. I know all of this, but why can't I just do it? And so to me, this is where the yogic practices and yogic philosophy as a whole really can help us to step onto that path. So I diverged a little bit, but it comes from my own passion to know myself, to know how my mind works so that I can be more skillful in how I'm engaging in life, so that I can catch myself when I act unconsciously. And I can repair any damage I've done sooner than later. And I can set myself up so I don't do that same mistake again, rather than, you know, continuing on the wheel of, oh, bad things always happen. Relationships always end this way. Or, no, it doesn't have to be that way. But what we need is a level of self-inquiry, and a philosophy of life that supports a level of self-inquiry, practices that help us to move through the challenging stuff, and community, you know, that can reflect new possibilities of being. So I guess that's a lot about what I'm passionate about.
Well, I love all of this so much. I think it's so relatable to just the human experience and who we are as humans. And also, thank you for being a voice for it doesn't have to be this way. If you are, you know, suffering or unhappy, or there are these patterns in your life, you're right. We all feel that I'm capable of something different. There must be another way. And I appreciate the reminders of how we can get there. It sounds like to me, it's our practices, it's our meditation, it's being with ourselves. If somebody though is listening and they really resonate with what you just shared, how can they get started on this path? Do you feel that meditation is one of the best ways to get there? Or is it self-inquiry? Is it being on your yoga mat every day? Maybe what did that look like for you, or where would somebody start?
Gosh, you know, it's interesting, maybe because I'm speaking to you and you have a certain, you know, expansiveness in your field as I'm speaking to you. There's a few different ways. Yes, moving your body, getting at home in your body. Yes, starting to do some breath work. I think breath work precedes meditation, because for so many of us to just meditate, it's so challenging. I didn't meditate for 10 years, even though I knew that I should, because the entry point was so overwhelming to me. I was like, I don't even know how. So start with following your breath, sitting and doing long, deep breathing for 5 minutes a day, following your inhale, following your exhale. Every time you lose focus, just come back. And start to create a certain level of presence, I would say, in that way. And then secondly, I feel like just again, given where we're at in the world right now, if you have the time, if any one part of you gets excited and lit up, I would recommend take a teacher training, immerse yourself, start to learn yogic philosophy. Because it's a philosophy of how to live excellently in this life, mind, body, energy, spirit, like all of it. And how to weave that all together in a way that makes sense. So I would say, you know, really investigate what yoga is beyond just the asana practice. Start to delve a little bit deeper. And I think it will really feed you to understand that and have conversations with people, you know, in your community that are on the path, and see what emerges.
Yes. Oh, I love that. Do you have a breath practice specifically on Glow? Do you have?
I think you can research just breath practices.
Yes.
Pranayama. Okay. I have lots on Glow.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that would be a really beautiful place to start.
I think so too, because when you do some of these, especially powerful breath sequences and short, you really get to experience the place where your mind is quiet. It opens up. And once you've tasted it, it's like, oh, that's it. Okay, so how do I keep coming back here? And how do I maintain this for the longest period of time? So I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, absolutely. I am absolutely love pranayama breath practices. I will say the breath practices I've done even just over the last month have been some of the most deeply healing experiences for me. I had that aha moment. I love meditation, and it's been such a supportive practice for me. And now breath just feels so essential. And my body, my nervous system, my mind, my heart is just absolutely loving breath. And it's, you know what I love about breath is it's, I want to use the word active, but it requires all of you. It like requires all of your presence. You know, you have to be so there for it to be with the breath in that guided way. And I think that's really caused me to just really deeply be with myself and be nowhere else, which can be really healing. So I'd love to talk for a minute about the radiant body. So your work, your trainings, your offerings are under Radiant Body Yoga. And I can guess why you chose that now. I love that your path started with beauty. I'm a Taurus rising. And so beauty is really important. You are. Okay. I'm like, she has Taurus somewhere in her chart, but I'm not going to ask her. Okay. I love it. My partner and I both are Taurus risings, which is really sweet. So beauty is actually also a big part of my work and what I feel I'm here to do. And I'd love for you to talk on, I know there are 10 bodies in Kundalini?
There's 10 bodies in Kundalini yoga. Yes.
Yeah. Can you speak to those and the radiant body specifically?
They all relate to a subtly different aspect of being. Yes. Let's see if I can just dial them all in offhand. So
okay. Off the cuff.
Off the cuff. Let's see. So, yes, the soul body. We know the soul body, right? It's that essential self, pure consciousness, we could even say. There's the subtle body, and the subtle body is what is said. This is a big bit of a deep dive for many, but it is what is said is the, it's like the collection of our personality that goes with the soul from one dimension to another, the soul being pure, untouched source energy. But then the subtle body is that which we carry with us from one life to another. So there's the subtle body. There's the pranic body, which is the energy body. And new science is, you know, proving to us over and over and over again that it's our energy body that is holding the physical body, not the other way around. It's the energy body that is influencing the physical body, not the other way around. So it's the pranic body. So soul body, subtle body, pranic body, the auric field, which is an emanation of the pranic body that surrounds the physical body. We would call it the electromagnetic field. That is really important, actually, because when our electromagnetic field is weak, we become really susceptible to everybody else's energy, everyone else's thoughts and feelings. We become susceptible to certain environments. When our electromagnetic field is strong, that we feel very safe, very steady. We are pretty impervious to energy that is at a lower frequency than we're at. So it's a good thing to have a strong electromagnetic field. There is the three minds, the negative mind, positive mind, neutral mind, which I've spoken to. Mm-hmm. There is the physical body, of course. Mm-hmm. Can't forget we have a physical body. And I think it's uber important that we do have a physical body. For any of you who may have dissociated like I did for much of my life, we lose all power and potency when that happens. And for those who are deeply spiritual and dissociate, it has a very detrimental effect on the psyche over time. So it's important that we stay grounded in these physical bodies. So here we are, we have a physical body. There's the arc line, which is the innermost part of the auric field, which goes from shoulder to shoulder over the head, and in women from nipple to nipple. Mm-hmm. And that's considered the place where a lot of the essence of who we are is held. Mm-hmm. And when we're clearing, for example, ancestral karma, we do a lot of practices that work through the arc line. Mm-hmm. And so we're clearing out like the past, energy from the past. And so it's the innermost border of the whole electromagnetic field, the innermost part. And then we have the radiant body, the 10th body, which is the essence of self. So if you see, you know, your soul, that emanation of pure consciousness inside of yourself, like 10,000 suns radiating inside of yourself. Mm-hmm. Your radiant body is all of the rays of your essential self that are emanating out in every direction. So it's the purity of you. So when your radiant body is strong, there's a natural sense of feeling sovereign. You know who you are. You're emanating from the truth of who you are. There's an authority that comes with it. There's a sovereignty. There's a regalness that comes with it. That sense of being, you know, king, queen, person, you know, totally reigning strong in your own radiance, in your own self. So that's the radiant body. And these 10 bodies are, you know, just different facets of understanding of who we are as a total being. So we're more than just a body and mind. We're body, mind, energy. We're more than just the energy. There's all these different facets to the energy. And then there's the soul. And then there's different, you know, qualities of energy that are connected to the soul. So you see, it's a complex thing, this human being. One of my key teachers for a long time, Guru Singh, speaks to the field of humanology, he calls it, the study of the human being, the totality of the human being.
Yes. Like, that's what I love studying. I love hearing you talk about this. I just light up. It makes perfect sense to me. You know, when you hear something and you're like, that's my truth. That's what I believe and resonate with. And I think a lot of listeners will really resonate with this as well. And yeah, I just so appreciate your work with the radiant body specifically. I feel so safe and held in your presence and so expanded with my own presence and consciousness from your classes and your style of teaching. So my last question for you is just, I love if you could share a day in the life and what that looks like. What are your practices? You are a full-time yoga teacher, and you know, all of us that are listening and that are connected, you know, with the Well Studio are teachers wanting to be teachers, love teaching, want to teach more. So I'd love for you to share what that looks like for you and what a day in the life is.
Oh, I love that. And you know, it all varies. There's a constant fluctuation. However, there's one thing that never varies. There's that I call my big rock, and that is my sadhana. Mm-hmm. So when I wake up in the morning, I have a practice, and I do that every day. So that means that it doesn't matter if I'm at home or if I'm on the road, or even if I'm in the middle of teaching something, I'm still doing my sadhana. That's my touch point to myself. That's my personal breath work, meditation, and, you know, Kriya Asana practice. My big rocks are breath work and meditation. Mm-hmm. Because that's where I'm doing the deepest work right now. And then the Kriya work is really only if I feel that I need to boost myself, particularly in a particular way. And the asana is there because I need it. I need it to stay whole in my body. And so those are things that I do. The asana, I try to do probably 4 or 5 times a week. I'm doing something that is on that line. Kriyas I'm doing here, there, and everywhere as I feel I need them. I'm happy to just pop down and do them. And stillness is the medicine that I'm cultivating more and more and more in my life right now. And I think that's also a life phase thing, that that's what's attractive to me at this point in my evolution.
So beautiful. Thank you for sharing and letting us into that. Well, I'd love if you would love to share any offerings that you currently have. Like I said, I've taken many of your classes. I'm in a training with you. I did your meditation, the mind training, which was absolutely incredible. If you're curious about learning more about yogic meditation specifically, but what current offerings do you have, or what do you have coming up over the next year?
So right now, thank you, by the way, thank you. Right now I have, quite a few. I have a Kundalini and the Radiant Body immersion coming up. It's part of my 300-hour, it's in September. However, I run my 300-hour in such a way that it's open to anybody who has an interest in deep study and learning and experience, deepening one's experience of yoga. Come join. It's a 60-hour online course. And I have a 200-hour coming up, which is three months online and 1 week in Mexico for like a deep personal dive together. I have a philosophy, yogic philosophy course called the Sutra Series that will launch for its second year in the fall as well, in October. And I have a Bhagavad Gita series for those interested in that level of yogic philosophy that will be launching in the new year, and a meditation course, a specific meditation course, not the teacher training portion, but just a very practical meditation tool with supportive practices that somebody who doesn't want to, you know, dive into the world of teacher training can do that. Mm-hmm. So that will be launching soon too. And I'm sure there's other things where we as a team here at Radiant Body Yoga, we're so excited. There's so many things that we are developing and in the throes of sharing. So yes, and I have advanced retreats for advanced practitioners that, you know, so for teachers and people who want to go and do deep dives that have become really, I think, one of my favorite things lately. Mm-hmm. So we go to Zion National Park and we do a week, and then I have another 10-day one coming up in India next year. So those I think are for specifically people who are already teaching that just have a level of stability in yourself already, but you want the opportunity with a group of practitioners who are equally dedicated to go to some really profound places. So those are something that we've been doing in the last few years as well. So yeah, there's opportunities, lots of things coming up.
Yes, you have so many incredible offerings and yeah, unmatched for just any level of practitioner and where you are and what you're wanting to deepen. So check out Kia Miller's offerings. And where can people stay connected? Your Instagram and website?
Yeah, kiamiller.com. Kia Miller Yoga is the Instagram and Facebook handle that I have a community, a free community, Radiant Body Yoga community as well, people can connect to. I don't even remember. I think that's usually, you know, an invitation. So you reach out at team@kiamiller.com, and then that's a place for supportive sadhana practice. That's really our primary goal there. Just somewhere where practitioners can come together and feel support. But kiamiller.com has all of it.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Kia, for just this conversation, your time, sharing your work with us. I deeply appreciate it.
Thank you. I just want to reflect, you know, you are, wow, it is going to sound kind of crazy maybe, but I just want to say your sweetness, your energy, your clarity, your wisdom, the space you hold is really precious and so unique, and you're so perfectly suited for this format, you know, where you're sharing and inquiring in this way. So wow, please keep doing what you're doing, and I'm sure your teacher training is extraordinary too. So thank you for the way that you're showing up in the world. It's inspiring to me too.
Thank you. That means so much. Thank you.
I love hearing from each of you in my DMs about how these conversations are landing for you and what is resonating and the changes that you're making as a result of these conversations. So send me a message at Marissa Rose Nash or The Well for Your Soul and let's connect. There are so many ways to stay connected with The Well Studio globally, from afar, right from where you're at in your own home. I offer classes on our Substack, meditations, kriyas, activations, journaling questions, and even recipes for you there. And we have an incredible training coming up. If you are curious about becoming a human design reader, our human design training is starting the week of May 20th, 2024. We also have our 300-hour yoga teacher training happening again in February 2025. And all the details for all of our trainings, workshops, classes, and offerings can be found at thewellstudio.org. If you are looking to deepen and expand your life, your well-being, your mindset, and your practices, I'm also offering one-on-one coaching and mentorship for women to really support their overall well-being and holistic lifestyle. You can find all the information for each of our offerings online on our Instagram, and feel free to reach out and connect anytime.